Seems like a pandemic's incoming. They're testing chickens and cows with the PCR test, and they're calling flocks. A vax is ready. Even in 2023, they started logging chick sales at the farm store, even here in Red State, Kansas. What can you do? We can't vote our way out of this. What are some positive solutions to handle the war on food? Homestead Padre joins me, and we talk about positive solutions to be able to stand against the war on food. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. I am taking a permaculture business design course through Regeneration Nation, Costa Rica, and it can prepare you for a career in permaculture or regenerative business, or it also can apply permaculture principles to your side hustle or your side business. It covers everything from how to design your intentional life to identifying your customer, working on your offer and your pricing. Check out the link in the show notes and come and join it. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I have Homestead Padre back with me, and we're talking about the war on food. Welcome, Padre.
Thank you for having me.
Everything's going in the news about the war on food. They're testing chickens for bird flu. They're testing cows for bird flu. They're starting to talk about inspecting local farms or even registering chickens is what California is even talking about. And that's not too far off, because last year in 2023, the farm stores, the big box stores like Tractor Supply, were logging if you bought chicks. They'd take your name and your address. Of course, they didn't do the ID, and you could say, oh, I'm John Doe. The foundation was being laid last year. What do you think? What's your take on it?
Well, I just a few hours ago read an article, and I don't know how true it is. I have not researched it, but it said that Australia is already implementing bans for bird flu. The province of, I think it was Victoria, mm-hmm. have banned citizens from buying eggs.
Yep.
They're culling millions of chickens over a fear. There's not even a case in Australia. There is a bird flu in Australia, but it's not even the same strain that's going around everywhere else, right?
Right.
I read that a few days ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know what's going on, but it does seem to be a lot of control mechanisms going in place, such as the smart ear tags going on the cows.
Yeah, it's just a little too convenient. So it's like all this stuff was waiting in the wings, and they're starting up the same things that we saw. They want another pandemic. Last month, an NPR reporter lady went and bought raw milk in Texas. So she bought it from several farms. She took it to several screening areas and then got upset because the screening facility in Texas, even though it was sort of like government affiliated, contacted each one of the farms to ask permission if they could test it. And of course, the farms were smart and they said no. And she was infuriated. And she was just gleeful about the possibility of there being bird flu in raw milk. So it's like, you know, they want a pandemic so bad. It's unbelievable.
It really does feel like that. Everywhere I look, everywhere I see, they've already produced a vaccine mm-hmm. for bird flu. I seen that the other day. The U.S. government's ordered like 500,000 already.
Yep. So here we go again.
Yeah, it's 2020 all over again. And one person that I watch, he's kind of a denier on a lot of things, but he suspects that you know, this could actually be a real deal this time. 2020 was a test run.
Yeah, that's what Cyprian said. So Cyprian's been on the podcast a couple times, and he says that 2020, the last 3 years, were the tutorial level of the game, and that now they're going to do the real game, right? You know, using the example that the tutorial level, you're kind of playing the game, nothing really happens to you and stuff like that. It is still questionable that they have all these they got the vaccine that quick. One thing to remember that people don't seem to understand is that, oh yeah, we won the last time. And no, it was the vax mandate was kicked out on a technicality at the Supreme Court. If you listen to the Supreme Court arguments, the lawyer for the states admitted right up front the government can do whatever they want, but it should be passed through the Congress. And right. I'm listening to this and I'm going, they're not debating the constitutionality of this. They're not talking about bodily autonomy. They're not talking about any of those things that people thought they were talking about, you know, and it got off on a technicality. And then Roberts, the Chief Justice, said that if Congress passes the mandate, that they will find, the Supreme Court will find it constitutional. Everybody's hiding behind courts. Everybody's got, oh yeah, well, we won this court case, we won that court case, and everything's reactionary. And, you know, that's not going to hold up.
I predicted a bird flu pandemic last year for this coming fall.
Mm-hmm.
Before, you know, every so many years, world governments get together and they do a scenario.
Right.
And I forget what this past one was called last year. I forget what they named it. But they did one in 2019 around SARS virus.
Sure.
Coronavirus. And then the pandemic broke out. Well, the one they did last year was around bird flu. That was their pandemic scenario. So, you know, I told everybody, I'm sure I could find the tweets if I looked hard enough, that this has happened. This is going to happen. It's happened before. History repeats itself.
Right.
You know, I don't, you know, so much has come out about coronavirus. I seen one where a government official admitted that the coronavirus was altered on purpose.
Sure.
And it'll be the same.
They admit that. So, I mean, you know, they were doing
gain and function. Bird flu. They've done gain and function on bird flu.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a man-made, man-created, man-released virus outbreak. And I personally am concerned it's going to be for real this time.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is all these people who are saying, yeah, we won the last, you know, and they're talking about how mRNA is bad and all this other stuff, which is demonstrably true. They're looking at the charts and graphs again, and charts and graphs never win. So, you know, the Karens and the people who, you know, who are going to react to things, it's not facts don't care about your feelings. It's feelings don't care about your facts. So you have to have some sort of other foundation to stand on than just playing by their games. So we've talked about the bad stuff. Let's talk about some positive solutions. What can we do? What can we do with our own flocks? We talked a little bit about laying a foundation in our lives. And we've talked about this before, that you have to have your mindset and you have to be spiritually ready for what's coming.
Yes, I can talk about the spirituality part of it all day long.
Yep.
But I think, you know, there's real physical need that we need to prepare for. We need to get ready for. And and it's going to come down to, people are going to have to take a different attitude and mentality towards simple things like the food that they're eating. I'm a little biased at this point when I tell everybody, you know, you need to start seeking out your local farmers. I say I'm biased because I grow vegetables to sell. It's becoming imperative that we learn how to eat properly and we learn how to eat seasonally.
Yes.
And we get away from the supply chains and the food coming from who knows where. You know, there's some things you can't help. If you want a banana, it's going to come from somewhere in Central America. There's no point that you're not buying local foods. I mean, I've helped several people find U-Pick farms in their own states and read places I've never been before. So I know they're everywhere. I'm sure there's some exceptions. The desert Southwest might be kind of hard to find one, but you know, it's, everybody's complaining about the price of food and inflation and the quality of food. And Scott, I can go, I grow food, but I also go to a U-Pick farm, because I have 3 acres and they have 300 acres. And I can fill five gallon buckets with vegetables, and it costs me $60.
Wow.
And that's a lot of food. If you're willing to eat that way and you're willing to eat seasonally, they're going to shut down at the end of June. My farm is going to shut down around the same time as them because, you know, we're pulling the spring crops. We got the fall crops going in the ground for, you know, September, October harvest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're buying that much food, if you know how to preserve, if you know how to can, if you know how to freeze, dehydrate, whatever, you know, there's no reason why you're not eating those foods until the next harvest comes around.
Yeah.
At a pretty low price. So I know prices are going to vary everywhere, but, you know, 25 gallons of food for $60, I can buy 10 gallons a week and have more than enough food, and I've spent $120. And from what I have witnessed and I've seen other people complain about, that's what, 4 or 5 bags of groceries from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is going to hurt a lot of people's feelings, and it kind of hurts my feelings. You know, we may have to adopt a more vegetarian lifestyle for a while until all this stuff that's going on gets cleared out. You know, I'm to the point, I don't trust beef that's in the supermarket. I don't trust chicken that's in the supermarket.
True.
You know, beef, what's not fake is scraps glued together.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so bad now. If I can't find meat at a local farm, I don't get it at all anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I used to work in the meat industry. I was IT for one of the big ag companies, and I toured the meat plant. There's a reason why they say you don't want to know how the sausage is made. So, you know, the thing is that get to know your local farmer, but at the same time, even if you do that, I mean, I've got 2 chickens that I'm buying from a pasture raised farmer dude, and they're probably going to cost me $25 each, whereas I can get organic chicken at Natural Grocers for $12. So, so I'm going to have a chicken that I know where it came from. I know what it ate. It's going to taste likely better. I got buffalo from some people down the street for, I think I got it for $9 or $10 a pound.
Oh, and gladly pay $10 a pound for buffalo.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and it tastes better. So,
people have to get smarter.
Right.
About the labels. You know, you're talking about the $12 organic chicken. You know, there's so much that the government allows that's not organic that you can still call it organic.
Yep.
Right. Or I gave this lesson the other day to a local here at the farmer's market about eggs. And they were asking, I didn't have eggs. There was another vendor there of eggs. And they were like, well, they're charging $6 a dozen of eggs. You know, cage free at Sam's Club is $4 for 18. Right. It's like, well, you got to start understanding the terminology, and a lot of people don't. And your cage free just means they're not stuck in 1x1 cages.
Right.
They still may never see sunshine or get fresh air, but they're cage free. Mm-hmm. You know, grass fed or even free range. Let's go free range because that's a popular one. That just means birds are allowed outside for a certain amount of time every day.
Right.
But it doesn't mean they're scraping grass and seeds and bugs. They're still all crammed together in these little run areas.
Yeah, as long as they have 108 square feet per chicken. Well, you know, I mean, that's still a major factory farm.
If you buy from Fred up the road, who is free range on his 5 acres of land, and he has, you know, 100 chickens at a time, they're probably more truly a free range bird, right? Or the eggs. I tell people I sell eggs. My eggs are by government standards, I could call them free range eggs.
Right.
But I do not call them free range eggs. I keep my birds in a run. They have a cover over them because I have a really bad bald eagle and red tail hawk problem here.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to keep them more protected. But yeah, I tell everybody it's. Or the organic? Well, I mean, I guess they're organic. I don't feed them organic feed. I feed them the feed that I make and grow. So, yeah, it's organic, but I'm not allowed to put that label on it. All those labels are just marketing gimmicks.
Sure.
And people have to really research and learn the difference between everything. You got to learn the difference between grass-fed beef and grass-finished beef.
Mm-hmm. And that won't even be denoted nowadays. They've now got to the point where if you put it on grass for the last few days, you can call them grass-fed. And one of the dirty little secrets anyway is that in the midsection of the country, we have most of the cows are 3 years or less. So, the ones that are going, the ones that are the good steak that everybody talks about, they're 3 years or less. Now, on the coast, and especially in California, in Pennsylvania, in the Northeast, all those cows are dairy cows. And so they run those dairy cows until they absolutely are about to drop over dead. They're not producing milk anymore. They send them to the plant, and then they process them. That's why, so McDonald's, Wendy's, all that stuff, or even if you buy a steak over in Florida or something, it's not even grain finished. It's like a dairy cow.
Yeah.
Going back to, get to know your farmer, get to know what you're seeing there, and then use more parts of it. Even if you're going to buy from the store and you're going to buy organic, if you buy a chicken breast, it's going to cost you $15. Whereas if you buy a whole chicken, it's going to cost you $15. You could get two meals, three meals out of one chicken, even if you're going to buy air quotes organic. So, right. We have to learn how to cook better. We have to learn how to eat better, eat seasonally. Apples right now, if you're eating apples, they're not from around here. It'll say they're organic, but they're from New Zealand. And it's
or they've been in the gas chamber all.
Yeah, or they've been in. Yeah, the ones that are at Costco are U.S., but they've been in a gas chamber since last fall. Or they spray the stuff, even if they're not, even if they're in season, they often spray them. They harvest them then when they're green, and then they spray them somewhere along the line, and they just don't have the nutrient profile. So it's like we got to get to the point where we realize that, hey, apples in April are not seasonal. That doesn't work. I mean, there's a reason why we have fruit in the fall. That's so right. You can pack on some poundage for the wintertime and, the weeks of want that come in the late wintertime, early spring. So one thing you said last year or last week that I thought was really great was you pointed out about foraging, that if you walk through the woods and you leave the woods to go back to your car and you're hungry, you've done it wrong.
Yes. There is so much. This time of year, I don't care where you live. I don't care if you're in the desert. I don't care if you're in the rainforest. Mm-hmm. There's food everywhere. We've lost that as a society over the last 150 years.
Sure.
This was 3-4 years ago. We were walking on a public trail, and I seen some wild blackberries. Mm-hmm. And I started picking and eating them, and I gave some to my kids. And this lady freaked out. Why would I give my kids poisonous berries? They're not poisonous. This is a wild blackberry. Yeah, exactly. It's wild. It's toxic. You can't eat anything out of the wild. And at that moment, I didn't know how to respond to her because I was just in such disbelief of what I was hearing.
Right.
But I've learned since then, it's so very common for people to think if it's wild, it's not edible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird mentality that we're in. And I've spent the last couple of years just encouraging people as much as I can, learn what's around you, learn what's in the woods, go for a walk and have a snack while you're walking.
Sure.
I have picked berries. I have eaten leaves. We took the inner lining of a bark one day of a, birch tree. We were out walking the driveway. It's been about a year ago, and I have really bad migraines, so it was killing me that day. But the kids wanted to walk, so he was walking, and we come across the birch tree, and I peeled some bark off and took the inner layer out of the bark, and I started eating it. And my kids don't think anything about that. They all know what that is. Anybody mm-hmm. not that doesn't know, it's very edible, it's very nutritious, and it contains the same chemical as aspirin.
Right.
So, you know, in that case, we have food and medicine. But there's so many people that does. I would say the vast, vast majority of people don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a running joke around here. In the early spring, the first berries to come out are the dewberries. For anybody who doesn't know, they look like tiny blackberries. They're on a vine that creeps across the ground, and they're really sweet. And my kids will go, "We're going to eat like our ancestors." And you look around my property, and there's kids squatted beside trees and bushes, and they're just picking dewberries off the ground and eating them.
Yeah.
And another person I talked to this year, I can't remember who, and they're a homesteader too. That's what kind of caught me off guard. They thought blueberries were toxic.
Wow.
And, I'm not trying to belittle anybody. Sure. It's just there's such a lack of knowledge out there that I really wish people would kind of take it upon themselves to learn. There's mm-hmm. plenty of wild foods that you can learn on your own safely.
Mm-hmm.
There are some foods you probably need somebody to teach you how to identify. But if you any field guide you get, they're on Amazon for $5, $10.
Sure.
It'll tell you. Yeah, and it'll tell you. And they're pocket sized guides, and it'll tell you if there's a look-alike. Well, if there's a look-alike, you know, just avoid that until you learn more.
Right.
But if there's not a look-alike, try it. You might like that root. You might like that leaf. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that tastes really good. That we just don't partake anymore. It's kind of insane that, and this is part of, again, this is part of the mentality shift that needs to happen. If all this food's going to get regulated and all this, you know, it's going to get to the point, Scott, where you or I, we're not going to be able to afford to buy a hamburger.
Yeah.
Because what is actually good is going to be so expensive mm-hmm. that you're stuck with either fake stuff, really bad stuff, or not eating it at all.
Yeah, it's pretty much analogous to folks buying tobacco nowadays. The tobacco is so, and I don't smoke or whatever, but the tobacco is so obviously poor that it's just amazing. It's like it's like I saw something the other day that said, if you are drinking tea that's from tea bags, that's called tea dust. That's the stuff that they shake through the sifter, and then they save the good leaves for the high-end stuff. You're getting the dirt and the tea dust and everything else, not to mention the fact a lot of those tea bags are, you know, have chemicals sprayed on the cotton and stuff. But, you know, from a foraging standpoint, I can go outside right now. My path has plantain all the way along the path. You've talked about using amaranth in basically like lamb's quarters, both using the leaves, especially early in the spring. And then also once the seeds start coming out, it's a very good high protein thing that you can actually grind up into flour as well. Right.
You can amaranth is so cool because you can grind it up into flour. You can make it like you can cook it whole, almost like a tiny couscous. You can actually pop it. Like popcorn.
Really?
So it's an awesome little plant, and I grow them every year. We started out for the flower, because my wife has Crohn's disease. Amaranth is an amazing plant, and it grows. I have amaranth growing wild all over my property that I didn't plant. You know, it's usable too. You know, the spiny amaranth kind of sucks harvesting because it's spiny. It'll stab you.
Mm-hmm.
But those leaves can be boiled down and eaten like spinach or...
Yeah, I know a guy that he gets all of his greens from nettles early in the spring. And he'll spend 2 weeks harvesting all the nettles before they get their major leaves. He gets the young leaves, and then he'll boil them up and then freeze them into balls. And then he sautés them a little bit, and that's his main green for the entire year. His freezer's full of them.
Yeah, and it's free food for him.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's That's the thing. We talked about cheap food going to these farms, but there's free food everywhere.
Right. And a lot of it is getting used to it, getting used to the bitter. And then one of the things I like growing right now is sorrel, especially the bloody dock sorrel, because it looks cool. It freaks people out when you mix it in with their salad. It's got a lemony taste. It you don't want too much of it, but you know, once you start adding in those kinds of things or those you know, lamb's quarters or something, they take a little bit more enzymes, they take a little bit more chewing, you know, to break down, but you know, you get used to them, and then you're actually creating more enzymes in your mouth and your stomach to handle that stuff.
And it goes back to what you said a minute ago. People have to learn how to cook it.
Correct.
Yeah, you have to learn how to identify it. And some of it's great raw. Lily pads. Every part of the lily pad's edible, from the flower to the leaf to the shoot that goes down into the water. Mm-hmm. Would I want to eat it raw? Absolutely not. Is it edible raw? It is. Okay. Now, then we got a process there of steaming. The shoots especially can be quite tender if you steam them or bake them properly. There's so much out there that people just don't know how to do. And there's still a lot I don't know how to do. I'm learning things all the time on wild edibles. But we're surrounded by free food. So I'm from North Carolina. Up in North Carolina, kudzu is the damned weed. It's taken over everything. You know, it takes out trees and buildings and this and that. The entire plant is edible.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, people look at this blight that's running across the state, and I know people who eat it, and I know people who will graze their cattle and goats on it, you know, for a feed source for their ruminants.
Hmm.
You have to identify what's what and what you can use and how you can use it. And I started out there because anybody that knows me knows that I'm a huge fan of dandelions. I think they're one of the greatest plants put on earth. The flower's edible. The leaves are edible. The larger leaves are kind of bitter. You avoid those, get the more tender, younger leaves. The roots make an amazing coffee. I'll take dandelion root tea over coffee any day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually extract oils from the roots that are 85 SPF, natural sunscreen.
Really?
Just rub the dandelion root extract on your skin for protection. So, you know, but it's the most killed, quote unquote, air quote, weed in the United States. Everybody's got something against them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wild good food. The leaf has more. It's spinach is a superfood. It's got everything spinach has doubled. The nutrient value of it is amazing. There's so much that you can forage. There's so much that you can grow. There's so much you can raise. I got a friend in Gulfport who has three large aquariums and a spare bedroom, and he grows tilapia in them. And he's got a system there. He's got three tanks, and they're three different ages, and the third tank are plate-sized fish. And he eats tilapia once a week. He's vegetarian 6 days a week. He eats meat on the seventh. If you look at other cultures around the world, that's not uncommon. And right. We're talking some of the healthier in Japan and in Greece and other places, that vegetables is 5 to 6 days out of the week. And you only get mm-hmm. meat 1 or 2 days out of the week. And when they do eat meat, it's a very lean meat.
Sure.
Mostly goat. It's the most popular.
Yeah. Last time you were on, you were talking about starting the Mediterranean diet. How's that going?
It has been a battle to get my whole family on board. But when we do it and we do it steady, I feel better.
Mm-hmm.
100% feel better. The big hold up is it's high vegetable diet. And you got people, especially my 9-year-old, who hates any type of vegetable you put in front of her, or fruit. She won't eat fruit either.
She won't eat vegetables?
Or fruit. She will not eat vegetables.
Wow.
And when she was younger, 3 years old, 4 years old, she wouldn't eat meat. She would only eat vegetables and fruit. Then she switched. Yeah, it's all about education. Yeah, the thing everybody needs to be doing right now is educating themselves. If they want to exact enough control over food, they're going to begin removing the resources for you to learn about things like this. It will be I'm not going to say they'll call it fake news, but, you know, they'll start publishing scientific papers disproving this and disproving that. And I've already seen that started in some places and on some things. I can't remember. There was a plant that the USDA was like, don't touch this. You can poison yourself with it. Mm-hmm. It's a wild plant that a lot of people grew up eating and our ancestors ate, and not one that I've had myself. That's why it's not sticking with me at the moment.
Right.
But you can already see some of this stuff starting to come out. I seen something not too long ago about the dangers of sassafras root.
Oh yeah, I've seen that before. Don't go making root beer out of sassafras.
Yeah. I grew up drinking sassafras root beer.
Sure. Yeah. And just because they fed it to mice at a super duper toxic level doesn't mean that a little bit is bad.
Right.
You know. So yeah, definitely they have it even at work, you know, these corporate things with ESG, they're starting the S part of ESG is sustainability. And they actually had on the company intranet an article about look out for these invasive species, and they listed a bunch of them. And if you see them, use this app to report them. And I looked at them, and they were all food. You know, they were things that our ancestors ate. You know, all the things we've been talking about. Oh, if you have this, you should report it, and somebody will come and spray it. And it's like, what? You know, obviously, this was city people that wrote this. So it's like,
but once they come out and sprayed, well, now your ground's toxic.
There's basically to get compost. We don't have a lot of good options. One, we have get manure from somewhere, and it's usually had animals that are eating sprayed hay. There's the city compost, which is mostly trees, and that's not too bad, even though they do something to it to turn it into compost to speed it up. But there's another one that if they get it certain times a year from Kansas City, it will have a lot of residual herbicide in it.
Yeah.
And so I've got to, you know, sometimes I get some of that if I'm starting a brand new bed. And if I don't do it the right time, then it'll, you know, the beans will come up and just die. It's not as bad for trees because trees are more long-term. Not going to grow anything in that. So, you know, they're spraying the heck out of everything.
I just sprayed compost on my beans a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say the name of the company publicly, but I'll tell you afterwards if you want. But it's a compost I've trusted for years, and it killed everything in my grow bed.
Yeah, I've been seeing that too on some well-known compost sources that pretty much everybody knows.
What it boils down to is I'd kind of made a decision before that, but I was kind of desperate and I needed some extra. The desperation cost me a raised bed. I only trust my own compost now. And I'm fortunate. You've seen me bragging about getting truckloads of spent mushroom blocks.
Sure.
You know, I'm fortunate that I have that resource available to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every truckload I bring home, it takes a year to break down. It's a year before I'm composting with it. Side note, the last batch I brought home, I spread out in the garden and grew mushrooms everywhere. So that was fun.
Yeah. I had it in the garage in the spring waiting to put it in the garden. And I had three blooms of mushrooms, oyster mushrooms from that, those mushroom blocks that were in the garage. That won't work this time of year because it's too hot. But
yeah,
it was during the cool season. I had some really good mushrooms off of that.
Back to what we're saying is you're going to have to learn your sources.
Sure.
You're going to have to learn how to source it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to learn how to grow it.
Right. And cook it.
Mm-hmm. It's very hard. I was not raised eating healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I was not raised eating seasonally. It can be very overwhelming when you first try.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, there's mustard greens everywhere, wild mustard greens. And it takes a while to get used to eating them because they're bitter. So,
right.
You know, let's talk a little bit about preparing mentally and spiritually, because, and I've told this story before, but, you know, I was well prepped. A lot of the listeners were well prepped. Then why were they so freaked out about COVID? I mean, I went to the store in March of that first weekend in March of 2020. And I don't know why. Part of it was because I wanted to watch the world burn or something. I don't know. And part of it was because I still had one of the problems with prepping is that you constantly still have an anxiety.
Yes.
You never feel like you get to the point where you are ready. Back in 2020, that first weekend, I was plenty prepped up. There was no reason to go to the store. But I went to the store and I watched bare shelves and I watched the people freaking out. There was some mental effect there. And then spiritually caused a big change. Realized that, hey, my faith can't handle this. My faith didn't have suffering built in. Suffering is seen as weakness. Suffering is seen as you did something wrong. Suffering is seen as you deserve this somehow, right? And that led me and Purpin, of course, to Orthodoxy, where suffering is explained. I mean, it's baked in. That was a big key for me.
It's even in the prayer, Lord, help the Orthodox to suffer.
Help all our Orthodox to suffer. That's true. So
with the prepper mindset, I think it's because we feel we never, you know, like what you just said, we never have enough.
Right.
But I think the freak out came because I don't think a lot of preppers actually expect it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there. It's a contingency plan. But they don't, I think deep down, everybody is clinging to this faith and hope that the system will work itself out. You know, me too. I don't want to watch the world burn. I don't want to have to scrape by and get by and worry about my kids starving. And nobody wants to have to do these things. So I think that's where, that freak out came from. My wife was much more calm than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And my freak out, I kind of freaked out because things were disappearing. And at that time, you know, I spent 10 years in logistics and shipping, and I know how the supply chains go. And the supply chains could have handled 2020 if the masses didn't freak out. I think I freaked out because other people were freaking out and they were making everything worse. It'll happen again. And mm-hmm. it'll happen over and over every time. I live in hurricane country. When they say there's a storm that might be coming, Lowe's and Home Depot's cleaned out. It's just this deep desire in humanity to survive whatever's coming at whatever it comes to you. You know, it reminds me, though, that in Matthew chapter 6, you know, Christ is talking about, you know, take no thought. What you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, what clothes you're going to wear, because God knows you have these needs. And you seek the kingdom of God first, mm-hmm. and God will add these things to you. So there's a promise of provision that I think slips a lot of people's minds in times of chaos like that.
Right.
I have lived my life by those three verses since 2020, when I lost my job and Scott, I've had moments in the last 4 years where I didn't know where the light bill money was going to come from, or the rent money was coming from, or the grocery money. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. God's provided it for me. So it's when to prepare ourselves mentally and spiritually, we really need to dive back into the promises that Christ made us and try to live these things now when we're in abundance. So that when the time of struggle comes, because it's going to come again, it always comes again.
Mm-hmm.
We're better prepared for it then. And I'm not saying go out and be poor tomorrow and try to live your life that way, but you can live your life like you're poor. I don't know how to word this. You can live your life like you're poor, even when you're not, as a way to prepare yourself. So what I mean by that is don't go out to eat five nights a week, two nights a week. Don't go out to the movies. Don't go buy the brand new fancy things. You know, take stock of what you have and learn how to live with just that,
mm-hmm.
and appreciate that. I grew up poor. I grew up very poor.
Me too.
And, you know, I've heard it say so many times, poor people know how to have fun. It's because poor people, I think, have a better appreciation for the things they do actually have.
Yeah, I struggle with that because it's, I actually eat out more than I should just because I was raised poor. Like I'm trying to prove that I didn't come from that or something. When I was a kid, we never had fresh fruit or vegetables. We only had it once a year. And then I couldn't handle it because I was used to eating canned fruits and vegetables. And when I had an apple, I didn't like the texture. When I had a pear, it disgusted me because I didn't like the texture. Oranges were too strong. And we had peaches and strawberries with strawberry shortcake or peach shortcake like once a year. And the rest of the time, it was canned vegetables, canned fruit. My mom mixed powdered milk, half and half with regular milk. For many years, that's the way we were.
Yeah, you eat out of cans and boxes, and you get used to the cans and boxes because, A, it's all so heavily laden in sugar. Back in when I was growing up, I know when you were growing up, MSGs were in everything. MSGs makes everything taste good and tricks your brain into liking it.
Well, we were
And
even so poor we couldn't eat the stuff that had MSG in it.
yeah.
So we didn't have no Doritos because we couldn't afford those.
I was telling my wife this story not too long ago. When I was little, every weekend we went fishing. Now, most of what we ate during the week, we had a lot of pinto beans and cornbread. I've eaten so much pinto beans and cornbread in my life.
Yeah, that's
Every
good.
weekend we went fishing. And every Saturday night we had a bonfire in the backyard, and my dad would pull out the cast iron skillet and we'd cook fish over the bonfire. And it was just the coolest thing for me. As I got older, I realized that was our meat protein source. My dad did a very good job of disguising it as, we're gonna go have fun, father and son, and spend some time together. And I understand why now that I'm 40, that my dad, if we didn't catch anything, he'd come home kind of angry. Angry at himself.
Oh,
I remember
wow.
he used to beat himself up for not catching anything. And now I look back and I know, well, he wanted to feed the family fish that night and he didn't bring anything home. And so he had that, he felt like a failure.
And there's something
And
pure about that that we're missing.
there is. There really is. My kids say it all the time now. First world problems. We have
Well,
first
first
world
world problems,
problems.
yeah.
And first world problems is we have to create problems for ourselves because we don't have any problems. And I think back on my childhood and like we had a lot of problems. Yeah, I remember being 6, 7 years old eating dandelions in the backyard. And I drank water out of the water hose, that whole cliche thing. But we picked cherries out of the cherry tree, pears out of our landlord's pear tree. They had a big grove of pear trees. And that a lot of times we were eating either what we found or the cheapest stuff my dad could buy at the grocery store. And there's a pureness to that that a lot of people just don't know anymore. And I didn't know it then. I know it now. I didn't realize until I was an adult that I spent my childhood surviving.
Yeah, I didn't realize that some of the things we were eating were handouts because, it wasn't obvious.
Yeah, I didn't realize until I was older that my dad used to go to food pantry once a month. And the local Catholic church would always hand out food. And it wasn't very much food, but that's also the one time a month I got grape juice.
Or you go to the fish fry on Friday nights during Lent at the Lutheran church.
Our Catholic church up there. And yeah, we wasn't Catholic. I wasn't raised in church at all.
Right.
But we went up there on Friday nights, because if I remember correctly, and we're talking the late 80s, it was like $1 a plate.
Good times, good times. There's something you look back and it's tough, but at the same time you look back and you almost wouldn't trade it for the world in some cases.
I used to get sent to my great grandmother's house in the summer, and you're going to help your great, and she didn't need it. She was 100 and something when she died, and
Wow.
I was 12 when she died. And I hated going because great grandma had me out in her garden all day long. She had a 1 acre garden,
Wow.
and he didn't own a tractor.
You were the tractor.
And I hated it. I hated it. But I've pulled so much from that since I became a homesteader. Of just thinking back to those summer days with my great grandma. I never could understand for the longest time why my parents sent me there over the summer. I ate the best during those summer months out of great grandma's garden. I hated the food. But again, now we're talking again. When I was at home, I was eating out of boxes and cans. Great grandma was cooking fresh out of the garden. I could not stand the texture of fresh green beans. You're used to the mushy saltiness of the canned green beans.
Yeah, I still don't like fresh green beans. So because of that,
I've come to like them. I actually prefer them raw. I'll eat them straight off the plant.
Oh yeah, what I like is asparagus. I hated canned asparagus because it was all floppy and stuff. And then you have fresh asparagus comes up. It's not woody. It's not like the store, and it's juicy and crisp, and it's just like, what in the world? This is like worlds away. This is like another universe.
I've learned that gardening over the years. There's so many things that I hated before that I love straight out of the garden. I hate cooked carrots. I hate cooked carrots. To this day, I will not eat a cooked carrot.
Really?
They're mushy, and they don't taste the same anymore, and they're just terrible. Mm-hmm. I've hated them since I was a kid. But 3 weeks ago, I had a carrot that I harvested all my carrots back in February that I grew over the winter. And apparently this seed just lay dormant all winter long and sprang up. And 3 weeks ago, I harvested a carrot out of my chickpea bed. And that carrot was so juicy and crunchy and sweet. It was so good. I ate dirt and all.
Yeah, I just harvested the spring crop of potatoes. And I still have enough time to get another potato harvest in.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get them to grow out, the seed potatoes from the spring are kind of not looking that great, but we'll see if they sprout and give me another crop. I should be able to get a crop by the time the first frost comes in October.
I just planted Indian corn yesterday.
Wow, corn.
Here, I can get three crops of corn if I push it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Indian corn, it'll come out just in time for Halloween and Thanksgiving. You know, the nice, pretty bright reds and oranges and purples. Like it's not as sweet. A lot of people think you can't eat it. You can. It's just not sweet like modern hybrid corns are.
Well, yeah, but the modern hybrid corn, the sweet corn, is actually a mutation. That's the milk stage of the corn. Otherwise, if you let it sit a couple more weeks, it'll get dent corn, I think, is what I was reading.
Yeah.
And so, so you'll just get the regular old dent corn in a couple of more weeks.
So, and again, a lot of people think you can't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very edible, but it's not going to taste the same.
Yeah,
And I don't eat my Indian corn. I actually use it for chicken feed. The Indian corn, I will sell whatever I can sell at the market. You know, people buy it for decoration because I pick it, I dry it, and I'll sell it. But most of it will go back to chicken feed.
You know, what's really funny is there's going to be somebody listening to this right now and said, you talked about the war on food, but then you're not actually talking about how we're going to fight against the war on food. And it's like, you're not going to fight the war on food.
Right.
You're going to, you can't vote your way out of this.
No.
And if you think that, certain person's going to win and all of a sudden this is going to turn around, you weren't paying attention in 2020.
Well, so, it is a war. And because it's a war, you have to have a military mindset.
Right.
In the military, we were taught adapt and overcome.
Mm.
And that's all we can do is adapt to what's going on. Sure. We can't fix it. We can't stop it. I hate to sound so negative, but the people in power control it, and there's not enough people to stand up and take it back. And even if we could, do we even know how to?
It's not a civil war. It's not voting your way out of it. It's making that underground, that community that's going to look out for each other, that's going to take care of stuff. Maybe you have your chickens over running around in the forest. You have your guerrilla garden You've got a food forest that nobody knows is a food forest. You got all the stuff we've been talking about you can eat, and nobody's going to know that it's food. No one's going to stop you. That's true independence. It's community, local community, family, and individual independence.
Yes. There is, I think, one way that it can be fought against, and that's with our wallets. People have to quit buying boxed and canned goods. They have to quit buying processed foods. They have to quit going to McDonald's and Wendy's. And you have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And until, you know what, all these big corporates care about is money. All they care about is money, making the profit quarter after quarter.
Right.
As long as you're paying them to do what they're going to keep doing it. Scott, there's not enough people that are willing to take that stand. There's not enough people willing to give up going to the grocery store three times a week. Let's talk about the farmer's market. I have one customer. He comes and he looks through my tomatoes for anything with bug damage on it. And he buys that.
He buys that?
He buys that. And I asked him why last weekend, and he goes, because I know you ain't sprayed anything on it.
Oh, wow.
And I eat bug damaged produce. You know, if it grosses you out, cut that part out. The rest of the fruit is fine. You know, that's what I do. I don't eat the part the bug's damaged. I cut that piece out. But why is the produce in the grocery store the way that it is? Because it's got to have a certain aesthetic look to it, or people just won't buy it.
Yeah.
I'm selling black krill tomatoes right now. Mm-hmm. And I finally convinced the lady to buy one. And it's organic, heirloom. I grow completely organically. And she tried one. She came back the next week. She goes, that's the most amazing tomato I've ever had.
Yeah.
And I said, that's because it's not a hybrid. It wasn't picked green.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't sprayed with everything to make it look pretty.
Right. And you built your soil.
And Lord knows where I'm at. That's a challenge. I've been taking uglier and uglier produce to markets. And I've given some away. Like, just take it home and try it.
Wow.
Take this ugly, bumpy, warty-looking tomato or squash. Take it home and try it. And week after week, I'm getting the same thing. That's the best tomato I've ever had. That's the best squash I've ever eaten. It was ugly, but it tasted good. And I'm like, because now you're eating heirloom. Nothing hybrid. Nothing that's been messed with. Nothing that's been, you know, breeding aspects into a crop is still a form of genetic modification. So it might not be done in a lab, but you know, you get these nice round globular tomatoes that are perfect and shiny and pretty, and they have no flavor, but they look pretty, and people want that prettiness.
Right.
And then you try one of my ugly tomatoes, and it just punches you in the mouth with all the flavor that's in it. And people don't understand why. Even after I explain it, some of them just can't comprehend it. Like, well, those at the store, even if they're organic, truly organic, you're still buying a variety that has been bred to be aesthetically pleasing. So, you know, it's a mentality. We're back to the mentality shifting. You have to start thinking differently about your food.
Yep.
You know, if something's ugly, it's not going to taste good every time, but if it's heirloom, it's probably going to be ugly. You get to the point where what you thought was ugly a couple of years ago is the most beautiful tomato you ever saw. Well, you'll look at it and go, that one's going to taste good, and I want it. I eat them off my vine while I'm going to the garden. I love tomatoes. They're my snack.
So how can folks contact you now? You got your Substack back up?
I do. I'm back up and running on that. It's padre.substack.com. Then the website's getting revamped. I got blog articles coming out on that now. I have a not a co-writer, I have a contributor now. He's an old friend of mine. Nothing gardening, nothing homesteading, nothing prepping, nothing like that. He's a man that's my age, that's been through a lot of stuff in his life, and he has a lot of deep thought content. Wow. I've given him an outlet to share that, and he writes some really good stuff.
Great. That's on your Substack also?
Smith-Homestead.com website, where you go for my soaps and everything. Mm-hmm. But I now have a blog page there. So Smith I'm writing
people like Homestead.com?
Yes.
Okay.
So I got blog there, and then I got the newsletters coming out. Most of the newsletter content is you're gonna have to pay and subscribe to read it.
Good.
I'll give you half the article. You're gonna have to pay for the other half. That's just how it's got to be.
But yeah, I think the Substack model is starting to work. I'm taking the Thriving News, Thriver News, whatever it was, and moving those articles back to Thrive in the Future because they drive search engine, you know, organic traffic. And I'm also going to move them over to Substack, some of them over to Substack, and do it that way.
I'm bringing my podcast back by the end of the summer. It too will be on Substack. You will have to pay to hear it.
So what about what about those hot sauces? Those hot sauces are awesome.
Yeah, hot sauces are going good. I have a bunch of your favorite right now.
Really? Is that the smith.homestead.com also?
Yes.
Smith, okay, because I'm out.
Yeah, smith-homestead.
Mm-hmm. .com.
Yes. And then I have bushes full of ghost peppers. So if you like really hot stuff, I have hundreds of green peppers I'm waiting to ripen right now. There's about to be some really hot stuff coming on the website.
Did those fish peppers ever germinate?
No, they did not.
Oh, goodness. That's terrible.
My datil peppers didn't germinate either. I went on Pepper Geek's website a couple of days ago, and I was reading article after article after article, and I think I know what I did wrong. And next year, I'm going to do it very, very differently. I think I'll have a much better. I still have some of those seeds left over that you gave me, so I'll plant those again in the spring.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've got those and a couple other peppers going, and then I usually combine them, dehydrate them, and grind them up into a seasoning. And I just now ran out of jalapeno and fish peppers seasoning mixed together. So,
well, I'm about to pinpoint focus my farm on peppers. So next year I plan on having 50 different varieties of peppers.
Got to keep the goat out of there.
Yeah. I'm more worried about the chickens.
Oh, but, yeah, the chickens are flying over the
I have a deer coming in my garden now. In 10 years, I've never had a deer problem.
Yeah, I've had that too.
Coming out every morning and finding tomato plants laying on the ground.
Really? So the deer mess with tomatoes?
This one does.
Huh.
Or it's going through the tomatoes to get to everything else, one or the other. But found the droppings. I found some hoof prints, and I'm like, my dogs are going crazy right now. I don't know if you hear them barking.
Sounds good, Padre. I appreciate having you on.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm actually going to do a newsletter on this in the next week or so.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com. So if you like this content, and let's face it, this is positive solutions when everybody else is talking about everything negative. If you like this content, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future, or go check out the stuff on our stuff page on thriveinthefuture.com/stuff. You'll help support the podcast and maybe a little less hysteria in your life. Take care, everybody.